Blog Talk Radio.
And we're taking it on the road. The last week from Target, this week from the IS-250, the Lexus driving to Pennsylvania. Happy New Year, everybody, or Happy New Year's Eve to everybody. Our last show of 2013, my esteemed co-host, Seth Kamens, in the city, Sean in New Jersey. How are you, sir?
I am doing well. Happy New Year to all. Mr. Palmer on his way out to Pennsylvania. I am chilling on my couch for a change. It's a rough life, but someone has to have it.
Well, we got the start of a new year, which means the conclusion of an old year. And lots and lots and lots of things that we can talk about today. Our year in review, the long-awaited year in review. However, if you'd like to call in and talk about just about anything, 760-283-0846, I think we could probably call this the year of 2013 the start of the demise of New York sports. I think that's a good way of going about it, because I don't see any good future for any team.
Well, I don't know if I want to go that far. Your Jets, yes. If they can draft a quarterback or a wideout or get to or something, I think have some potential. I think we can forget about New York basketball for a while, to say the least. Hockey, tough to call for me. Although the Islanders seem that, I mean, there's hope, but there's always hope. And baseball, it's going to be a tough couple years, I think, for Yankee fans. For Met fans, I think we're waiting until 15. So I don't know if I start with
so
the demise.
Well, short-term demise, if nothing else. I mean, the next 3 or 4 years in New York sports are going to be horrendous. I mean, we discussed this last week with what Santa could bring. And I think what Santa could bring to all fans is a little bit of hope. Because I don't see anything good in the next 2 or 3 years. I don't see division titles. I don't see, unless there's a drastic shift in something, I don't see any division titles. I don't see any, perhaps any playoffs. I mean, in the NFL, they turn over every year, but.
Yeah, have you seen the Atlantic Division? I wouldn't be surprised if somehow the Knicks and Mets pulled that out.
Oh, well. Well, for both of these teams with no draft picks, that's the thing. But Seth, I just don't see it. But so that's the end of an old year, the start of a new year. And so one of the questions that we had posed to each other that I posed to Mr. Kamen, teams or sports names that are going to either lead the news or become evident in the 2014 calendar year. So who's going to be at the top of the charts? What do you think going forward?
Wait, hold on.
Say that again?
So 2014 starts a new year. Who do we think is going to be, like last year, if you asked me 2013, who is going to be leading the pack in 2014, just in general, I would have said probably my biggest disappointment of 2013, actually, I would have said Rory McIlroy. He was ready. He was primed. He was going to do great things in the golf world. He had just come off a huge Nike contract, and he was ready, willing, and able to just shoot to the top of the golf rankings, and he did both. So he leads my disappointment of 2013. Who are going to be the guys that are going to lead the way through 2014 for you?
There are a few. I think, you know, you start off with the pretty obvious choices. You start off with LeBron because he's LeBron. You start off with Serena because she's Serena. I think you may want to look at a Leo Messi in Argentina. Leo Messi leading Argentina potentially to a World Cup in soccer. You probably look at one of the new faces in the Winter Olympics, and I don't admittedly don't know the Winter Olympics as well as I know the summer. You know, I know Lindsey Vonn is hurt again. I know Sean White will be out there. In baseball, well, I mean, there's so many young, great players. You have a Trout in California, the Manny Machado in Baltimore, though he's injured. It's a tough run. For tennis, there's nobody. There's no one. You know, if you're looking for a breakthrough athlete, I think...
Not necessarily a breakthrough athlete. Somebody is going to lead the headlines. Who are the headlines for 2014?
Okay, well, LeBron is always going to be the headline. A-Rod is always going to be the headline. I think these are people I'm kind of tired of talking about, to be perfectly honest. I think Johnny Manziel is going to be a headline because that's just what he is, starting with tomorrow night's game against Duke. Those are the three or four that kind of stand out right off the top of my head. We may also want to look at a guy like a Jabari Parker, who's kind of that interesting mix of, well, you know, he should come out after a year. He'll be a number one pick in one of the best drafts in recent memory. But he's also the kind of personality where you can see him actually staying another year at Duke. Although, as I said, I think it's extremely unlikely. I think Jimmy Johnson, if people care about NASCAR, going for his seventh championship. These are the names that kind of come to my mind.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking, I spent a good amount of time thinking about this. I think these are your names looking forward to 2014. Johnny Manziel is definitely going to be a name, not only necessarily for tomorrow night, but for the draft. I think he is one of those polarizing guys that you either love him or you hate him. I think he's going to be an interesting pick. I think Tim Tebow, again, will be a name in 2014. Yesterday he signed a 3-year deal with
the
ESPN.
Please, no.
Yeah, 3-year
no.
deal with
the ESPN. Well, I know he signed a deal with ESPN. The only thing that would make me happier is if by signing this deal he kicked Lou Holtz off of the air. Well, we both know that won't happen.
He's going to be part of the SEC channel.
Right.
I think what will be interesting is the two things for Tim Tebow is, number one, can he temper his religious views? Because I don't think ESPN or anybody is going to permit that on its airwaves. And when you hear Tim Tebow speak, a lot of it is God and Jesus, and that's fine when he's speaking for himself, but now he's speaking for a network, and that is a little bit of a difference. Number two, Tim Tebow is always the optimist. He's always the guy that this is good and this is good and this. I don't think I've ever heard him say anything bad about anybody or anything. And I'm sure he has, but I just haven't heard it. So here's the question. He's now an announcer. He's now an analyst. Well, teams are going to stink. Does he have the wherewithal to then pull out, hey, you know what, I think they should bench this guy? And Jesse Palmer is very good at that type of criticism. I wonder if Tim Tebow will follow in this Florida quarterback's footsteps. And I know, Seth, you're surprised that I remembered that Jesse Palmer went to Florida. So
I didn't say a word.
I think Jabari Parker, again, another one of those. But I think the two biggest people this year, and it's an interesting mix, one is Billie Jean King. Well, actually, I have three of them. One is Billie Jean King. One is Alex Ovechkin. And one is the first, I really do, and we saw some rumors of this yesterday. We should touch upon it. They were just rumors, so it's not like we can give it full credence. But I believe the first gay athlete that is playing, not a Jared Collins, but the first true player, will come out this year. And the way that the sports world handles that, the way that the media handles that, will say a lot for the way that this country has, for where this country has come. So I think those are your three biggest ones. And Billie Jean King is all about the Winter Olympics. She was sent there by President Obama as a delegate from the U.S. As we know, Russia, the Soviet Union, has the Sochi Games this winter, and they have for everything that we believe in the United States, they have done the exact opposite in regards to gay and lesbian rights. And Billie Jean King, a self-proclaimed lesbian, had for a long time has fought for gay and lesbian rights in this country. And I thought it was very apropos of President Obama to send her to Saki. And Alex Ovechkin, well, if you're going to pull a gold medal out and you're one of the top five players in the NHL, you better do it at home. He's going home for those Olympics, and he's going to be the biggest star on the biggest stage. So let's see if he has the wherewithal to do that.
Well, the thing with Billie Jean King is not only Billie Jean King, but I think Brian Boitano, who also came out of the closet last week, is on that committee as well. Ovechkin has already stated that he would have played in this Olympic Games whether the NHL allowed it or not. So this is his Olympics. You know, this is it. This is the biggest thing for him. This is it. As you said, this is his country, his tournament. It's his time one way or the other, and we'll talk more about the Olympics in the upcoming weeks. Who is the third? I forget. Whoever comes out of the closet. It seems like it's on an inevitable trend that it's inevitable that this is going to happen, whether it's 2014, 2015. And my hope is that whoever does come out, that it's not going to be a role player that people are going to forget about 2 months later, but a person that's typically in the sports world that's known not only by the major sports fans but by the casual fans as well. Whether it's a superstar or not, I think would bring more credence to it.
Yeah. So looking back, we should do some look back as well, but let's start with the college bowl game. I know we're flipping back and forth. If you'd like to call in, 760-283-0846 here on the show. Again, Happy New Year to everybody and the last show of 2013. This will be podcast just like everything else, and we apologize for the change in time, but we figured you guys didn't want to be at home listening at 7 o'clock, and we certainly didn't want to be at home talking about it at 7 o'clock. So here we are earlier on in the day. We'll return to our normal scheduled time next week, next Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. So we got some bowl games that are coming on. I'm going to let you go through them since, A, you know more about them, and, B, well, I guess I really don't care. I mean, there's a whole lot about this. I think the game that I cared most about was last night's game where Texas played Oregon. So I wanted to see what Mac Brown would do on his way out. And he got thoroughly destroyed.
Simply put, talent-wise, Oregon's a top-5 team. Texas is barely a top-25 team, and that's an issue. That's the big issue. Is Texas over the last 5, 6, 7 years? You know, since the Vince Young era, really hasn't gotten the talent, especially on the offensive side. Now there have been some disappointments, but when you think about it, Johnny Manziel, obviously a Texas guy. Goes to A&M. Robert Griffin III goes to Baylor. You know, these are quarterbacks that went to a school in Texas and did not go to Texas. Now, whether or not they were this is the talent that Mac Brown has not been bringing in on the offensive side. And whether, you know, they didn't have much of a chance in this game. They're just not talented enough. Oregon overwhelming in talent. Scored on a defensive play the first offensive play of the game, and kind of cruised from there to a pretty easy 30-7 victory. Nothing really. It's been a very uneventful bowl season. And yes, while I love college football, what I used to love about college football more than anything else was January 1st, when you turn it on and there were 4 bowl games at 1 o'clock, 3 at 4 o'clock, and like 2 at 8 o'clock. And then that was it. Now everything's spread out. There are so many bowls, I can't keep up. And I feel like I love the regular season. I don't love the bowls. It's too much. I mean, I'm very happy that Maryland went to a bowl. But going to the Military Bowl against Marshall at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a random Thursday is just not that exciting to me.
Well, is that the point as to why they're, this playoff is for the people like you, where they're
yes.
not, you don't care at this point. Are you going to care about the national championship game?
I'm going to care about a couple of things. I want to see Stanford, Michigan State tomorrow afternoon. I think that should be really good. I do care about the national title game because I think they have the two best cases for the national championship. Can you argue against Auburn? Yes, you can. I mean, obviously the two somewhat fluky wins, but going 11-1 and winning the SEC certainly makes them a valid choice. Obviously, Florida State going undefeated makes them a throw-in into the title game. Yeah, I think it's an interesting game. I think there's going to be a lot of offense, and I'm looking forward to it.
Are you going to look more forward to the playoffs next year than you have the bowl game this year?
Probably, yes. Again, with a four-team playoff, I'm not sure it's big enough. But,
right.
Yeah, the idea that Stanford, you know, if we were doing this as a four-team tournament, the idea of Florida State probably versus either Florida State, Michigan State, great offense versus the best defense in the country, and probably a rematch in Alabama-Auburn, which was the game of the year. I mean, that sounds pretty cool to me, to be perfectly honest. And
now, is that,
more so, I'm sorry.
Is that because of the novelty of next year, or will that just, do you think that will continue even if they just keep it at four teams?
I don't know. I can't tell you. My hope is that it continues, but I can't tell you that unequivocally. But, you know, it gives me something specifically to look forward to. Like right now I'm watching Arizona-Boston College, which is a nice reward game for two teams that overachieved this year. But it's kind of, unless you went to Arizona, and I know we have a couple Arizona listeners actually, or we went to Boston College, does anyone really care?
No,
it's hard.
It's like Syracuse, Minnesota.
Yes.
I went to Syracuse. I watched maybe half of the game, and I can give part of my shout out now to Sean Keeley and Nunes the Magician for doing something absolutely incredible. We'll touch more upon that in the shout outs at the end of the show. But there were only probably 5,000 Syracuse fans there. I mean, it's not a game that people are traveling to go to. So, yeah, I mean, I watched it. I'm glad we won. It was great, 21-17. It always is nice to end with a win. But at the end of the day, is it going to change anything that I think about? No, not at all.
So, now we'll see what happens. It's going to be it'll be interesting, as it always is. And, you know, it's not the kind of thing I think you can gauge off of 1 year, because at the end of the day, the goal of the BCS was to put the two best teams in the national championship game. And while it didn't happen every time, I mean, most of you, or those of you who have listened over the last couple of years, you know, probably remember my disgust with Alabama making it 2 years ago over Oklahoma State. There was a big controversy, LSU, Oklahoma, and USC about 2005, 2006, somewhere around there. For the most part, they've done the right thing. And the BCS has also, you know, has also given us some of the greatest games, greatest moments in college football history. The rise of the mid-major, Boise State over Oklahoma, obviously USC, Texas, Michigan, Texas the year before that. It's given us some really great games. So I think people that really, I think has gotten a bad rap up to a certain point. You know, the idea is most people want to see an unequivocal champion. And this hasn't done that every time. The four-team tournament probably will. So we go from there.
Yeah. So what other bowl games are you looking at? You like the Rose Bowl.
I love the Rose Bowl. I like Mississippi. I'm looking forward to, I think it's the Cotton Bowl, Missouri-Oklahoma State, which I think should be pretty good.
Missouri, you know, one game away from a national title. I think Ohio State-Clemson may be pretty interesting. I'm curious to see how motivated Ohio State is going to be for this game. I'm not really sure. Clemson, really kind of a disappointing year. The expectation was they were – I had them, I believe, in my national title game against Stanford. They didn't quite live up – they didn't live up to that. And as I said, you know, I'm looking at the January 1st games. Wisconsin, South Carolina is pretty good. You know, the Oklahoma, I think, it gets blown out by Alabama. I don't think that's really close. But those are the two or three games that I'm looking forward to. Oklahoma State, Missouri, Stanford, Michigan State, and, of course, the national title game.
Okay, so coming out, who do you think is going to make the biggest impact on those games? I mean, I think there's another point to be made after this, but Jameson Winston, the first true freshman Heisman Trophy winner, cleared of all charges, supposedly, definitely cleared of all charges. Is this where he puts his stamp on it? Does he win the who do you think wins the national championship and why?
I think Florida State wins the national championship. I think they win because they're simply a better team. I think that Auburn will have some success running the ball. I think this is going to be a very fun, pretty high-scoring game. I see it something along the lines of 37-31, Florida State. The difference is Florida State, unlike Missouri, I think has the athletes. Missouri, although Missouri's defensive line was sensational this year, I think Florida State has the athletes to keep up. The question is going to be that if this is a 3-point game, 6-point game, 7-point game in the fourth quarter. Florida State has not had a game, I believe, within 14 points. I think Boston College was the closest, and they were right at that point. How is Florida State going to react to a game where it's a 3-point game with 6 minutes to go? Auburn obviously has been all through those throughout the last month and throughout the SEC season.
Yeah. Kind of the next story that comes out of college football after this is who replaces Mack Brown. Now, Mack Brown played his last game, coached his last game last night. In my opinion, has gotten kind of a bum rap. He hasn't propelled them to consecutive chances. He's not Nick Saban, but look at what Texas was before he got there. Look what they are today. Without him, that doesn't happen. So here we have this behemoth of a job, and they're going big. I mean, they're looking at James Franklin from Vanderbilt. They're looking at Charlie Strong from Louisville. Jimbo Covert. Sorry, it's not Jimbo Covert.
Jimbo Fisher from Florida State. Jimbo Covert was the old offensive lineman.
I thought that only one person would ever be named Jimbo. But here we go with two. And there was one other guy that I don't recall who was on their radar.
Art Briles from Baylor.
Right, Art Briles. So do you think it's any of those four?
No. Fisher re-signed with a 5-year extension today with Florida State. So I think he's out of the picture. Charlie Strong, I think, is the best coach of those three, but I don't think he's the right fit. I think Charlie Strong, number one, is in a great situation in Louisville. And I don't think he's the guy who's just kind of looking for the next job. I think his next job will be the University of Florida next year.
Well, Louisville moves into the ACC next year.
I understand.
Right. So that may be as big a job as he needs anyway.
Yeah. So I think and I just don't think Franklin's going to get the job. Just a gut feeling, you know, he's been relatively successful in Vanderbilt, which, you know, it's Vanderbilt. So any relative success constitutes a pretty major success anywhere else. I don't know if the logical jump is from Vanderbilt to running the biggest college football behemoth there is in Texas. I think there's a step in between there. So the question is, does Art Briles take the job? And I don't know. He signed a 10-year extension a couple weeks ago. And I mean, I crushed Steve Alford for pretty much signing a 10-year extension from New Mexico and going to UCLA 2 weeks later. So I kind of don't want to think that Briles is going to take the job. And as far as I know, it has not been his dream job, surprisingly, as you would think from any other Texas coach. I don't know who they're going to go for. I really don't. You know, if these are really the four choices, my feeling is that they'll go with Art Briles. However, I wouldn't be surprised to see potentially maybe one of the 300 fired coaches in the NFL look at this, or them go on the coordinator side and go from there. From the NFL.
Well, I think that there are two things going on here. First of all, for those that are unaware, coaching contracts in the NCAA and in the NFL and in the NBA and in baseball, well, baseball I think does, but the others don't matter. Especially in college sports, they don't matter. You can sign a 10-year extension and you'll be gone the next year because they all have buyouts. The NBA and baseball do not have buyouts. The NCAA all have buyouts. They all have exclusions. We hear about Bill O'Brien having a 5-year, 6-year contract at Penn State, and chances are he'll be the Houston Texans coach next year. It's the fact that he signs a 10-year contract is not like you and I signing a 10-year contract.
Agreed.
So that being said, I don't think Briles goes. I think Briles is beloved in Baylor. Older. He's an older coach. So I think he's like 65 or 66.
Yes.
And I think he's going to throw his hands up and go, I don't need it. Because he doesn't. Now, the question about Charlie Strong, I think Charlie Strong is the most likely of the four to go because he's at Louisville. It's not a huge behemoth of a job, and you're right. Florida may be his next ticket, but if Munchap comes back next year and wins 10 games, guess what? That Florida job isn't available. You take the job with the job supported to you.
Go ahead. The problem with Charlie Strong is when you're the coach at Texas, it's more than just being a coach. You know, Mack Brown, it's the personality that goes with it, and that I don't know if Charlie Strong has. I don't know if he wants to be doing the.
I think a lot
of these guys have that personality to do it. I do think James Franklin does. I think Jack Del Rio does. I think Gruden would. I mean, I think there are coaches who love that aspect of the business, and I think you need. To be at Texas, you need to be able to handle that aspect of the business and want to do that aspect of the business. I'm not sure that Charlie Strong does.
Okay. I was saying of the four, if you're thinking of the four, I don't think Briles wants that. I don't think he needs it. I don't think he desires it. Franklin, I agree. It's probably not – that's not his next position. But then again, we've seen big colleges take chances. Texas is a different story. And this goes back to what I was saying before. Texas is a big story because of Mack Brown. I think we totally undervalue how good a job Mack Brown did in turning around Texas. And I think he gets a bum rap for what he did. But that's neither here nor there right now.
I also don't think... You know, I always wonder, when you can recruit, you can get probably just about any player in the country, which you can at Texas, you should be that good. I don't think it should be a major rebuilding project at Texas. I don't think it should ever be like that.
Right, but they were before this, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah. They had a 6 or 7 year struggle and a half before Mack Brown came in. And while he deserves credit for turning it around, I don't think it's that big of a reclamation project. Is kind of what I'm saying.
Okay. I can go with that. So if it's not Charlie Strong and it's not Art Briles to me, You're thinking it's a Jack Del Rio. I don't think Gruden takes this job at all.
Gruden's already announced he's not taking another job this year. So,
well, he said that about the NFL. I don't want any of these jobs.
I assume that he doesn't want – if he's not going NFL, then he's probably not going to college.
I agree.
So, I mean, I think he's in a great position, and you know, I think it's a pretty easy life for him right now, and so why should he do anything else?
Yeah, I mean, his ego is stroked every single week by people saying John Gruden should be our coach. So, how much of a better gig can you have? No, seriously, Bernie, look. We all know John Gruden and Lane Kiffin, and I always confuse the two, but they're very similar people. They're both egomaniacs, and I think in some ways you have to be an NFL coach. So if he's every week being told how great he is, why is that such a bad thing for him? I think that would be something I would totally write up his alley.
Yeah. So, if I had to throw a name on who would probably go, I'd probably go with Jim Harbaugh.
Jim Harbaugh.
As he's not particularly – apparently there's been some issues with him in San Francisco. Obviously, they want to re-sign him. He hasn't been extended. I don't think he particularly gets along well with the ownership and with the GM.
Yeah, Trent Baalke. Yep.
He comes from a big-time program. He does kind of have that rah-rah college thing to him. He was very successful at Stanford. I would not be shocked. And I guess the question is, I mean, the Michigan job is probably not in play. I don't think they're going to fire Brady Hoke despite a pretty terrible year this year, which is his alma mater. I think that probably makes the most sense. If I'm Texas, that's who I go after. If you're going to go college, David Shaw makes sense to me. Mike Gundy may make some sense to me, although I'm not sure that you want to really go, you know, hire an Oklahoma State coach in Texas. I'm not sure David Shaw would leave. You may even want to reach out to Gus Malzahn. You know, who knows? I think that's he's a Texas guy, if I remember correctly, and that's his dream job. Now, that's a pretty quick jump up, you know, going from pretty much small college, Auburn for a year, to Texas in 2 years. But, you know, the nice part is you have a lot of options. You know, you're Texas. You do have a lot of options out there.
Well, here's an interesting question. So you were talking about Jim Harbaugh in Michigan as opposed to Texas. San Francisco 49ers to Michigan, to me, seems like a step down. San Francisco 49ers to Texas, to me, may be a step up.
Well, I don't know if I agree with that. Michigan is a top 5 to 10 college football program, and it really determines whether he wants to be in college or the pros. You know, at the end, it's really that simple. I mean, based upon his success in the pros, he can stay there for a pretty significant – you know, he can sign a 5-year extension or go somewhere else in the NFL, and 25 teams will jump at the chance to get him.
Absolutely.
You know, it depends what he wants. If he wants the college life, then you're looking at schools like a Michigan, like a Texas, like a USC. The top 5 to 8 schools are what you're looking at, and Michigan is probably there. Although they've, at least they're on reputation.
All right, so here we are in our year in review. Who was the biggest disappointment in college football this year?
College football? Probably. Let's see here. Well, I'm trying to think who I took to do really well.
Clemson in the national championship game.
Yeah, that wasn't really a great pick, but they went 10-2, so it's kind of hard to be that disappointed with them. I would probably say USC. Obviously, very pretty disappointing, a 7-5 season. Trying to think who else. Georgia, but Georgia just got decimated by injuries, so that's a pretty tough call. People thought Texas A&M, led by Johnny Manziel, would make a run at the national title. Their defense was absolutely horrendous. Florida's the biggest disappointment. Missing a bowl game for the first time in 15 years, losing to Georgia Southern, who didn't complete a pass in a single game. Those to me are the two biggest disappointments. That's to me is the biggest disappointment in college football.
So my biggest disappointment, and there are two of them. One is Florida, for the same reason that my co-host just articulated. And second one is Jadeveon Clowney, who did nothing what I thought he was going to do this year. I thought he was going to thoroughly dominate college football, and he basically just took his foot off the gas. I think he was in neutral all year saying, I am going to go. He was counting his chickens, and I think that he'll still be a top five pick in the draft. I just look at him and I see Albert Haynesworth all over again.
Well, we certainly hope not.
Unfortunately, the Redskins don't get a chance to draft him at number two.
Yeah, let's actually transition. That was a sweet little transition to the NFL.
Thank you, but I was going to go to Black Monday first as we were transitioning from coaches to coaches.
All right, coaching. There are currently six open jobs.
There are six
in the
open
NFL.
Jobs, and there's one job that is not open. Hallelujah, Woody Johnson. Way to play. Thank you for not firing Sexy Rex.
Wow.
Because if nothing else, the Jets need some continuity. Because putting another coach back there is not going to help.
No, it's still a team with no offensive talent. And the defense rebounded nicely. Sheldon Richardson, probably the defensive rookie of the year. Becoming one of the top young defenses in the NFL. They need star players on the offensive side. They need a quarterback. They need wideouts. They could probably use, if not a running back, at least a third down scat back. But there's hope.
When your defensive rookie of the year scores your first touchdown on a running play, you need to get some offensive talent. Sheldon Richardson scored the Jets' first touchdown on a running play from the backfield. Time to get a running back.
Now,
time to get a wideout. Time to get a tight end. Time to get something.
Now, were you surprised by any of the firings?
Well, let's go through them. Shanahan, absolutely not. Shanahan was dead man walking through. Jim Schwartz, a little surprised again in Detroit. I didn't think he deserved to be fired. A little surprising. Obviously, Gary Kubiak's been fired for weeks, and the fact that Wade Phillips is not going to get that job does not surprise me at all. I was surprised that Cleveland let go of Chud. Incredibly surprised. I think that is an awful firing. I think Jimmy Haslam used to be a part owner of the Steelers that said that I need continuity the same way the Steelers have had. Well, this is not the right way to do it. Were you surprised by that one?
Stunned. That team had, first of all, played hard for the first 10 or 11 games of the season. Had three quarter. Your quarterbacks are Brian Hoyer, who plays well and then gets hurt for the year, Brandon Wheaton, and Jason Campbell. You have no running backs. You have one wideout. They're the only. If it wasn't for Josh Gordon, they would be threatening the Jets for the worst offensive talent in the NFL. You bring in an offensive coach with no offensive talent. What exactly do you expect? And I don't think you can ever fire anyone after 1 year. I don't think it's reasonable.
I'd go even further because Brandon Wheat wasn't his choice. Neither was Campbell. Hoyer was, and Hoyer did well. They traded their top running back 4 weeks into the season. They didn't have the top wideout for the first 4 weeks of the season. The tight ends got hurt. Cameron developed and then got hurt, Jordan Cameron. Their defense played pretty well. Hayden being a pro bowler along with DeQuell Jackson. Yeah, I don't understand that firing at all. And I certainly don't understand not taking any time to do it. They did it at 9:15 on Sunday night. Yeah, I just don't see it. I was also surprised that Shiano was fired.
I was on kind of press. I went back and forth on that one. I probably didn't expect it, but I wasn't really surprised. I was more surprised that the GM Mark Hominick was fired, because he had brought in a lot of talent on the defensive side. He drafted McCoy. He drafted Levante David. He brought in Vincent Jackson. He drafted Doug Martin. He drafted Glennon. This was a team that had some talent. And, you know, I don't think Shiano is made for the NFL. I don't, based on what I've read and what I've seen. I think he's a college coach. I think he ends up at Penn State.
Absolutely.
When Bill O'Brien.
Totally,
yeah, the only other option I see on that is if, and I think this is a 50-50 proposition, is if Tennessee fires Mike Munchak, then I think you have a very, I think it's a two-man race for that job. And that one's, we're still up in the air.
Were you surprised by any of the other firings?
No. Chudzinski was the one that bothered me. Shiano didn't shock me, I don't know if I thought that was a 50-50 call. Frazier, they had to fire him. That team was going nowhere. Shanahan, I've made my feelings clear on Mike Shanahan many times on this show. Jim Schwartz, I think they had to fire Schwartz. I think this team, Schwartz had done a very nice job the first few years, but the reality is this team has not gotten better. Matthew Stafford has gone backwards. There's a team with no discipline, and Schwartz is supposed to be a disciplinarian. They need to bring in an offensive mind at this point to somehow put together. The defense is now relatively solid, or at least better, or at least a good defensive line, I should say. I think they needed a new face in there. I think Schwartz, Schwartz wasn't going to win the division with this team, I think they had kind of they had plateaued. I don't have a problem with
it.
Are you surprised Dennis Allen hasn't been fired yet?
No. I look, the Raiders have had no cap room. They had $38 million, $40 million dead on the cap. I'm not surprised. I won't be surprised if they do fire him, but I'm not surprised if he stays either. I think that's a 50-50 shot as well, whether he stays. As for Mark Dominic, which you said you were surprised by him, remember, these owners for the Bucs are the Blazers. And at one point, the Blazers fired both John Gruden and Bruce Allen. So, at the same time, when 2 days beforehand, they said that they were both safe. So, I don't really put anything past these guys. I was a little bit surprised that Dominic was let go, but if you're the Blazers at this point, you're saying, I need to just clean house. I'm actually very surprised that the Lions have not fired their GM, because I think if you're going to clean house, you clean house. As far as Dennis Allen is concerned, I think he's been given... He hasn't been given the team that he wants. They've been so cap-strung and so out of whack that he hasn't been able to put together the team that he wants. I think he gets another year. I think he should get another year. Whether he does or not is a different story.
Well, I guess we should probably talk a little bit about Week 17. The two or three... Good call. I give us 75% props for both of us picking San Diego. The only reason it's kind of hard to give us full pat on the back is because the refs really blew the call on Kansas City's field goal to win the game on the last play. If you don't know, there is a rule you can only have six people on one side of a ball during a field goal attempt, and San Diego had seven. when Ryan Suckup missed a 41-yarder, right in front of the ref. San Diego, of course, would go on to win the game in overtime, making the playoffs after the Jets beat Miami. Both of us called that. After Cincy beat Baltimore, both of us called that. And leaving a very disgusted Mike Tomlin talking about changes to the rules committee in the upcoming summer. It has not been a good year for refs in any sport.
Now, it's interesting because I saw some of my Pittsburgh friends who are fans who said, okay, we lost the game because the refs screwed up. Now give us back our draft pick. That made me laugh a little bit because the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. You know what? I give us a lot of props for calling all those games right, though. I got 11 right this week, so I was doing pretty well until the guy ahead of me got 15 right. Then I looked at it and goes, okay, such is the way this year goes. I haven't won 1 week, and on the weeks I win 11 games right, people get 15. And the weeks that I get 4 games right, the winner is with 7. So,
womp, womp.
Exactly. You just can't win. So, to Devontae, and while we're closing down the NFL, to Devontae Adams, congratulations on your semifinals. Well done.
When we have the podcast next week, we'll discuss that. For those of you who probably this weekend, we're going to be taping a special podcast. The grudge match, Sean Palmer versus Nabate Isles. I will be anchoring. It will be interesting. I'll talk about it a little bit later in the show. Woo! I was going to say...
Oh, come on. We all do it in good fun, and none of us have egos. We all check our egos at the door.
Yeah, because if there's one thing that you and Mr. Isles do not don't have when it comes to sports, it's certainly its egos. The two games we should talk about a little bit additionally. Green Bay going to Chicago with a somewhat healthier, with a surprisingly healthy Aaron Rodgers. How does that happen? How do you let up a 4th-and-12 pass for 60 yards and a touchdown, a catch that I could have made, Randall Cobb completely open?
Yeah, welcome back, Randall Cobb. Welcome back, Aaron Rodgers. Welcome back to Pat's offense. The Packers' offense. Do the Packers have a shot this week against San Francisco at home?
They have a shot. I don't think I would take them. But they would.
No, you got Clay Matthews is out as well. He's not going to be playing. So, I mean, and by the way, to all you Green Bay fans, how do you like that tie now? Without that tie, you don't make the playoffs. Anyway.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Anyway, one more before we get to the year in review. Dallas, Philly. I took Dallas to win. I thought this was going to be the year that they were going to actually, because they were not favored without Tony Romo, who went for back surgery. So that shows you how close he really was to playing. And Kyle Orton, I thought, played very well. But the same problem happened. Well, number one, you have the interception, obviously, at the end of the game. Why does DeMarco Murray not get 25 rushes on that team?
I have no idea. I was saying the same thing. I've been saying it all year. I understand that they think he's injury-prone, but let him get injured then. Run until he's in the – I mean, every other team in the NFL runs their back into the ground. Why are you paying this guy $6.5 million when you're not going to run him? I don't get it as well, Seth. You're spot on.
And the idea, which I found – and, of course, the irony of Kyle Orton throwing an interception with 2 minutes to go. I think everyone felt pretty bad for him. It was very strange as a Giants fan rooting for the Cowboys, but I did find myself in that position. And I think you have yourself a pretty – I think we have a pretty interesting wild card weekend. There's no must-see games, but I think they're all pretty good. We'll do picks at the end. But I kind of want to get to our year in review. And where do you want to start? There's so much to talk about.
Who was the most disappointing team besides the Buffalo Bills fantasy team in the NFL this year?
That's a tie between the Falcons and the in Houston.
Okay.
In the Texans.
Well, I think you had the Texans in the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And I had the Falcons in the Super Bowl, so that makes one of us both. I think the most disappointing team is neither one of those teams, though. I think the most disappointing team is the Washington Redskins. Because all those other teams, both of those other teams suffered big-time losses, both injury and otherwise. And, I mean, the Falcons lost Julio Jones. They lost Roddy White for a while. Matt Ryan was banged up. Steven Jackson was banged up. Houston lost Andre Johnson for a little bit. They lost Matt Schaub for most of the year. They lost Owen Daniels, who I didn't think Owen Daniels was that good. But he's a big part of that offense, which I didn't realize.
Well, I don't think they lost Matt Schaub as much as they tried to get rid of Matt Schaub. And of course, you're forgetting the big name Arian Foster, who was out for most of the year.
Right, and Arian Foster. But the Redskins really didn't lose anybody. And they just stunk. They're giving up the number two pick in the draft. Again.
Yeah,
Robert Griffin trade is the trade that just keeps on giving.
Well, it is starting to feel like the Herschel Walker trade a little bit. But the reality is the Rams haven't gotten players of such of significant value at them. They did get Zach Stacy, who had a nice year. But they've gotten a couple rotational players and Michael Brackers and Janoris Jenkins, I believe. So, they now have the number two pick. Do they go, we're not going to talk this week about what teams need, so on and so forth. But the Rams are in a pretty interesting spot being a decent team in the toughest division in football. And are not in a position to move too much one way or the other.
Yeah, so I think that the Redskins are the most disappointing team in the NFL. Who was the biggest surprise?
The Carolina Panthers were the biggest surprise. That was a team I had going nowhere. That was a team 5 weeks into the season. Ron Rivera was going to lose his job. Now they are the number two seed. I think that's shocking. That's absolutely shocking to me.
I think the two biggest surprises two of the bigger surprises are the New York teams and the fact that they flipped. I mean, number one, I had the Jets at 4-12. They finished 8-8. I had the Giants winning their division. And look where they are, 6-10.
Well, wouldn't that be in a disappointment area?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. But they're surprised. Oh, you mean good surprise at that. You're welcome. Take that with a grain of salt. Anyway.
I always do.
Okay, so the next sport that we should probably tackle is the NBA and college basketball. College basketball has been interesting. And I say that last year I really enjoyed college basketball and the fact that Syracuse was good. Syracuse is good this year. But I really enjoyed college basketball, and I enjoyed it more because it wasn't to see these guys and where they were going to be in the NBA. And that's the way I feel this year is all about. This year is all about, all right, we're going to see these guys for 1 year, all the good players in college basketball are going to be gone after 1 year. I didn't feel that last year. Maybe it was, I don't know, but it didn't feel like that there were so many one-and-dones last year as there are going to be this year.
I think college basketball is terrible. I've thought that for years.
Terrible.
It's incredibly disappointing to me because college basketball was my favorite sport and the sport that I grew up on. And it's not enjoyable anymore to me, or much less. And it's nothing to do with Maryland being incredibly mediocre, so that certainly doesn't help.
However they are.
They are. I admit this wholeheartedly. But the problem is I can't follow the players. You know, I agree. Last year was a pretty enjoyable because you know who some of these guys. You know, when you knew who some of these guys were. If you followed college basketball for years, you knew who Peyton Silva was. You know, you knew who Kelly Olynyk was at Gonzaga. You knew who Trey Burke was at Michigan. They weren't one and dones. The one and done has, in my mind, has destroyed college basketball. And yeah, I mean, watching Kansas Michigan State this year, or Kansas Duke this year, was good. You know, Jabari Parker is a heck of a player. Julius Randle is a man child. But as you said, all it really is getting ready is an addition for the NBA. And that's, I agree with you, that's never how I felt about it, but it is how I feel about it now. And because of that, and to be fair, also because of my work life, where it's pretty tough, it's hard for me to follow as much as I used to. You know, college basketball, which was always my favorite sport and my favorite time of year. And I don't have that feeling for it anymore. I don't have that affinity for it anymore. I just think it's tough when every year you don't know who the players are and you don't really understand, and the teams just don't feel that good to you. And I mean, Louisville was a very strong champion last year, although Wichita State very well could have won that game. But you go back over the last couple of years, the caliber of college basketball is just not very high. It's just not been as high.
I completely agree with you. I mean, I have to say I enjoyed last year again because Syracuse was very good. It certainly helped out, but this year they're number two in the nation, and I don't enjoy it as much. I don't see myself watching as much. And that's unfortunate because college basketball may be, at its heart and soul, the best game of all the sports, no doubt. But it's not, and I hate to say this, it's not pure in the way that we remember it. So who was your biggest surprise in the NCAA for the 2013 year?
Wichita State. I mean, how could it not be? They're a 9 seed. They go to they beat Gonzaga in a great game. They, you know, and people say it's a fluke. Then they beat Ohio State, and then they outplay Louisville. Those of you who don't remember that game, because Louisville, the best game of the tournament, or of the final, I shouldn't say the tournament. Best game of the tournament was Kansas Michigan, but the best game of the Final Four, or one of the better games that I can remember the last few Final Fours, was Louisville-Wichita State. Wichita State outplayed them for 37, 38 minutes of that game. Louisville was extraordinarily lucky to win that game.
Well,
Louisville
was just deeper. I mean, at the end of the day, that's all it was, right? Louisville was just a deeper team. So hence, they were able to use that depth and press. And Wichita, I mean, I was at the game, so I was able to see this firsthand. Wichita just ran out of steam. It's just that simple. The Shockers ran out of shock.
Yeah. Sounds about right.
Yeah. And who was your biggest disappointment?
As usual, No, as usual, it's not Maryland, it's the ACC. You know, my feelings about the ACC basketball, and this has really nothing to do with Maryland jumping, ACC basketball has been overrated for years. Now, when you bring in Syracuse and Louisville next year and Pittsburgh, that obviously ups the ante quite a bit. But I've said this many times. The ACC basketball reminds me of Big Ten football. The only people who really think it's great are the people that watch, the people that are in those schools or in those conferences. ACC basketball has not been great in a long time, just like Big Ten football has not been great in a long time. However, Big Ten football basketball is really, really good. Duke made a decent run. They just weren't going to beat Louisville. The other teams are just blah, to be perfectly honest. It was a very mediocre year, I thought. And I think Kansas losing in the Sweet 16 again has to be a huge disappointment to any KU fan, you know, specifically Mr. Swade.
I'd agree. I think it's Kansas. I think Michigan this year is a big disappointment. They did lose a bunch of players, but they have not been the team that I thought that they would be.
Mitch McGarry's been out the whole year.
I understand. But the two biggest players that have been disappointments to me are two guys that I fully expect to be in the NBA, but may not have a place in the NBA right now. One is Glenn Robinson III, has not piggybacked on that great performance they had last year. Now, granted, he has lost a whole lot of his supporting cast, but it's been a disappointing year for him so far. And James Michael McAdoo, who supposedly who has the body of an NBA player, it seems like for McAdoo, the best time for McAdoo was when he came from high school. He seems to, he reminds me of Felipe Lopez. His best stock was when he was a high school senior, and he's only gone downhill since.
Yeah, McAdoo's been a huge disappointment in Carolina. And Carolina as a whole has just been, it's taken a huge step back over the last 2 or 3 years. And, you know, McAdoo's been at the front of that. They've had some nice wins with they lose. And this year, for the first time in years, there's been some disciplinary problems. What's his name? Is it P.J. Thornton?
P.J. Harrison
gets kicked off the team. They had one or two other guys that had some discipline issues. And it's interesting because my whole thing with Roy Williams was, yeah, he was extraordinarily successful at Kansas and extraordinarily successful in North Carolina, but it's not hard to recruit people to Kansas or recruit people to North Carolina. So now when the talent's not as great, how good a coaching job is he really doing? Kind of says it all right there.
Oh, great. Absolutely great. So who do you think right now? Pick me a Final Four.
Pick you a Final Four. Is this NIT Final Four? Or is this...
No, Maryland is not counting.
Maryland may not make the NIT Final Four. Heck, they barely did last year. We didn't make it last year. So, all right. Top 25, my fault. I'm going to go with Arizona.
I guess what I'm asking for is when I go to Dallas and I see Syracuse play in the Final Four, who are they playing against?
The women's team is going to make the Final Four?
That's not Dallas.
All right.
All right.
Okay, tough. Final Four. No, I don't... I'm gonna say you're gonna be there. I'm gonna say Ohio State's gonna be there. Michigan State's gonna be there. And I had said Oklahoma State originally. I'm gonna stick with that.
Do you think Kansas is again gonna disappoint?
Isn't Kansas ranked like 20th in the country right now?
Yeah, but Kansas has more talent than any team in the land, to me.
No, Kentucky does. I don't know. I think Kentucky has extraordinary talent, but they haven't put it together. Kansas has the talent, but they just seem to run into, I don't want to say bad luck, because that's not the right way to put it, but they just don't seem – they can't seem to get out of their own way.
That's fair.
Like Oklahoma State. I like Michigan State. I like you guys. I do like Ohio State. I wouldn't be surprised to see a Wichita State make a run. I wouldn't be surprised to see, a Kentucky or Kansas make a run. But right now I'll stick with those four.
All right, fair enough. And those are subject to change, obviously.
I would hope so. And what are you?
Well, my Final Four are Kansas, Syracuse, Ohio State, and Oklahoma State. So we're very similar and yet very different.
That kind of sums us up as a whole, doesn't it?
Agreed. But I think we're going to see a rematch of Syracuse and Kansas in the finals. I think Kansas wins, but I think by that time they actually make, they put it all together. And Josh Wade will be much happier than he was in 2003. So here we are looking at the NBA because you go from basketball to basketball. And again, if you'd like to call in, 760-283-0846. We've got 24 minutes left on the year in review, which coincidentally is exactly how much time the GPS says I have until I get to my hotel.
Glad we could be of assistance to you.
There you go. Well, this segment of our show is sponsored by the fries at McDonald's, which I'm eating right now. So,
are we really giving McDonald's free advertising?
There you go, Allentown, Pennsylvania, McDonald's. They're actually very hot, not too salty. Anyway, so with the NBA, I don't think there's any doubt who my disappointment is, and that's any team that's in within 100 miles of the New York area.
I was just going to say the entire Eastern Conference, but yeah.
Yeah, it's deplorable. And my surprise,
we've talked about it so much, I don't really feel a great need to discuss it.
I agree, which is why I'm moving on to my surprise. My surprise team is your former favorite team, way back when, the Portland Trailblazers, who have come out of absolutely nowhere and been a top team in the West. They may actually be leading the West right now.
San Antonio and Oklahoma are all in this three-team rotation right now.
Yeah, and I'd even put Oklahoma City as one of my surprises because I certainly didn't think, the losing James Harden, that they'd be where they are today.
Is a surprise. Reggie Jackson has been a shock.
Yeah. Well, after last year in the playoffs, you thought Reggie Jackson had talent. I mean, we knew that when he came out of Boston College. But he's basically become Russell Westbrook without Russell Westbrook being there. And now with Westbrook out until the All-Star break, we're going to see really what he has going on for him. I think that they hold on to the 2 seed, and Westbrook will, I wouldn't be surprised if Westbrook becomes the 6th man on that team, just to keep him, at least this year, just to keep him fresh.
Wayne.
And I think as far as another surprise, I think Dwayne Wade has to be a surprise, because the way that the Heat have managed him, he's been able to put up those Dwayne Wade games that we thought were gone for forever. And I love watching Dwayne Wade play. When he's healthy, Dwayne Wade may be the most exciting player in basketball. When he's healthy. So, Facebook message for Seth Kamens.
Yes, you have a shout-out from Miss Mendelson. She says to say hi.
Oh, hello. Can you please bring me back my shorts? Anyway, moving on. See, and I thought you'd laugh at that.
I'm just not in a laughing mood right now in general.
Aw, poor Seth, want to talk?
Womp womp. See, I can do it to myself as well.
Merry New Year.
All right, let's go through some quick topics. Game of the year. Or play of the year, I should say.
They're the same thing. Auburn, Alabama.
For me as well.
Or
that would be number one. There were a bunch of
players. Or Georgia. Either one of them.
Well, that would be, for play of the year, those would be my top two. Three would probably be the Ray Allen three-pointer in game six of the NBA Finals. A couple others to mention. And I remember this well because we watched it. We were doing our year in review show last year on January 1st. The Jadavian Clowney hit on Vincent Smith in the South Carolina-Michigan game. And also the Mile High Miracle, which made Joe Flacco the $120 million quarterback. Well deserved.
I agree. Go to the year. I think Raheem Moore may be that guy.
I was going to go with Aaron Hernandez, personally.
Well, I was thinking he would be the felon of the year, but yeah, sure, why not?
Oh, that guy, I think, would be the one who bombed the marathon.
Oh, that's the worst story of the year.
Those two, that would be the worst. For Hernandez would be the second worst. I think the Lance Armstrong interview would be the third worst, where he admitted to doping and to pretty much ruining everybody's life for 15 years. But we're supposed to forgive him. And then as we've said, it's an interesting argument because he has brought in almost half a billion dollars to charity based on the Livestrong. But it is a difficult it's difficult to reconcile.
Great.
What would be your team of the year?
I don't think it's much of a choice to me. I think it's got to be the Red Sox. I don't think that there is a group of players that really exemplified the word team more than they did.
I think that's completely fair. I actually had Bayern Munich in there because I always have to throw in my soccer team because they didn't lose a single league game this year and won the Champions League. So that to me is a no-brainer. You can put a circle around the Blackhawks, the Red Sox, and the Heat, and pretty much pick one out of the hat. I would probably, the Blackhawks had a 30-game unbeaten streak during their year, although I don't know if that was all in 2013. The Heat had a 27-game winning streak. Boston didn't have anything of that magnitude, but did overcome so much in regards to both number one, the marathon, and number two, and it sounds, Bobby Valentine. John Farrell does an amazing job there. The other team you should probably, the other team or two, Florida State, as we said, even when they haven't won the title, having won every game by 14 points, at least, is pretty impressive, no matter who you're playing.
I agree. And they beat Syracuse by like 30, so yeah.
No, they beat Maryland by 60. So, I was trying to think what else. Other memorable moments that we didn't really talk about too much on the show. Andy, we've talked about in the past, but we haven't brought up yet. Andy Murray winning Wimbledon, finally.
Yeah.
So I can stop watching tennis and watching Wimbledon and stop hearing how a Brit hasn't won since Fred Perry in 1939.
Well,
kind of tired of hearing it.
That to me may be the biggest story. I think between that and the bombing, both for different reasons. I think those are the two biggest stories, because while we don't get the same amount of coverage here on Wimbledon that obviously they do in England, I still go back to the fact that how many years had it been? 54 or something like that?
74.
74? Okay. So the fact is that if compare that to a U.S. champion, that would be the equivalent of myself and my mother never seeing a U.S. Open won by a U.S. player. I just think that's an incredible story. And the fact that he was able to do it after winning the Olympics the year before makes it that much better. So, yeah, it's been 6 months since then, so you kind of lose it, but I think that he has been, I think that's one of the biggest stories, if not the biggest story in sport.
The other one, and this is something where I've gone back and forth on, is the Mariano Rivera farewell tour. I thought the moment where he actually left, where Pettit and Derek Jeter replaced him, I thought was pretty great. But I've got to imagine, and this is a player who's certainly, I think it's fair to say, is beloved by everybody, which is often hard to swallow for Yankee hitters. But I did think the farewell tour became a bit much. And I'm assuming it just got tiresome for a lot of non-Yankee fans to hear about this on a daily occurrence.
I agree. I liked the All-Star Game appearance by him. I think that was important. Very important. I wish that they had started him. That would have been even better. But, yeah, I think that you're right. That is and I keep trying to think of good things as opposed to bad stories because it's kind of hard to keep reminiscing about bad stories. But the day that Ryan Braun actually agreed to a suspension was a huge day in sports. Huge. And I know the fact that he lied, cheated, steal, stole, blah, 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 ruined a lot of people's lives. I get all that. But to me, that was the day that the drug policy in baseball was declared as working. Because you needed a superstar to be suspended. Until you had that, nobody would ever take that policy seriously. So, and I think one of the bigger stories going forward, we never like to talk about it, but what happens with A-Rod?
And I would continue to not like to talk about it if possible.
I understand. A-Rod's become our Dwight Howard. I get it.
Yeah, we seem to go through this every year that we have one player, one team where we just get tired of talking about them. You know, when we first started the show, which was, I guess, over 2 years ago, I think.
Indeed.
September of 2010, I think we started this.
Indeed.
So, or September of 2011.
No, 2011.
So we kind of missed, I think, the LeBron escapades. The summer of LeBron. But, you know, the two stories that we just got tired to death of talking about were Penn State and Dwight Howard. And as strange as it sounds, it was even worse talking about Dwight Howard because it just kept going. You know, Penn State was terrible, and then you were done with talking about it. Dwight Howard just kept going and going and going and going and going. So, biggest upsets of the year.
I'm sorry? What did you say?
Biggest upsets of the year.
Biggest upsets of the year. That's a tricky one because there weren't a whole lot of, like, really, really big ups. I think, Baltimore over Denver. In Denver.
Surprise, yeah. I don't know if I would call it that major of an upset. To me, Florida Gulf Coast going to the Sweet 16.
Yeah, that too. That Georgia Southern over Florida.
Yeah. Well, we've actually, the biggest one I had, I talked about this on the So Much to Talk About TV show, which will be on tomorrow night, and I know you'll all be watching, 9 o'clock on Manhattan News Network. Louisville over Baylor, the women's Sweet 16. Baylor had won 72 out of 73 games. Brittany Griner, you know, her last collegiate game. Also, Rafi Nadal and Roger Federer were supposed to play in the quarters at Wimbledon, and neither one made it to the second round. Nadal knocked out in the first, Federer knocked out in the second. Some other big ones. And but I think those are the other couple that came to mind. Who would be your athlete of the year?
Well, we talked about this in Sportsman of the Year versus Athlete of the Year. If we're going to go athlete, if we're going strictly by the word athlete, I don't think there's any choice but LeBron James. None. I think he has done everything he said he was going to do and more. He's kicked the crap out of everybody.
I would have him number two. In my mind, Serena Williams is actually the athlete of the year. Highest winning percentage of the last 25 years, wins 78-4. And this is after, you know, kind of being injured for a bit on and off the last couple of years, kind of losing a little bit of her dominance, her aura. And she came back and she dominated this year. And she's so far above everybody else that she could be playing, they could be playing their A game. She could be pretty much playing her B-minus game. And she's still the best in the world. And that's just terrifying.
Because she's where Steffi Graf was and Monica Seles were. Well, Steffi before Monica, and then Monica Seles before she got stabbed.
Yeah, that's... But neither Monica nor Steffi could have athletically kept. Serena's just a different world.
Well,
so we got about...
Yeah, they're different time periods. Absolutely.
So we got about 8 or 9 minutes left, and I want to talk. Number one, I think we should do our who are you picking in the national title game?
Oh, I'm picking Florida State. No doubt in my mind.
Wild card picks.
All right.
Kansas City at Indianapolis.
Kansas City wins in Indy.
I like Indy. Kansas City has not looked good the last month of the season, last 6 weeks. And I get the feeling Indy's got one win in them this year. And
you got to excuse the fact that they didn't look good last week. They didn't play anybody.
Well, they benched all their starters. I'm not talking about last week. But they really haven't looked the same since the 9-0 start to the season, in my mind.
I agree with that.
Although Jamal Charles has obviously been sensational. Cincinnati at home against San Diego. Do they finally get
Cincinnati.
Off the playoff schneid?
Cincinnati, no doubt.
I like Cincinnati as well, and I think it sets up a surprisingly interesting semifinal game at New England.
I think that's a great game.
I do too. I think New England has absolutely overachieved this year, going 12-4. People wonder why I say I think Brady. Why I give Brady so much credit as opposed to Manning. Look at the talent that Brady has around him. He's got nothing right now, and that team continuously finds a way to go 11-5, 12-4. Yes, they're in a weak division. Yes, they've been doing this forever. But these players all he's just never had the talent around him that Manning has had. In the NFC, I was about to say Detroit. Green Bay at home against the 49ers.
I'm going to take the 49ers to pretty much run all over them, like they have the last three times they played.
Yeah, it's a bad matchup for Green Bay. All credit to them for getting back to the playoffs in a year that they really, if they ever wanted to take an excuse, this would be it. But I agree, San Francisco playing too well, too tough right now. And Philly at a surprising Philadelphia Eagles team at home against the vaunted offense of the New Orleans Saints.
Who can't do anything outside, but this week I think they will. I think New Orleans wins this game, and I think they proved doubters wrong with this win.
I actually find myself surprised to say I agree with you. New Orleans has been horrendous on the road this year. I don't think this Philly team is quite ready for New Orleans. I think it's going to be one of the more fun games to watch. I think you're looking at a 37-34 game one way or the other, because I don't think either defense has a chance of stopping the other one. I think it'll be the team that gets the ball last. I'm going to agree with you and say New Orleans. So we got about 5 minutes to go, and
yep.
You want to start with your shout-outs?
Sure. So I got one. Well, first of all, shout-out to all of our listeners. 2013 has been a great addition for our show and for our archive, and we hope to speak to you again in 2014. Be safe out there, and no drinking and driving. If you look at our Facebook page, we have a number in case you are drunk and you cannot drive. AAA will pick you up for free between 6 p.m. and 6 a.m. today. So please take advantage. We want every single one of you listening to us in 2014. Second thing is, and this will be my last thing, Troy Nunes is an absolute magician. Sean Keeley. So Syracuse is a long way from Texas, and we weren't going to send anybody there. It just didn't pay. So he set up a foundation where he wanted to send 300 kids from inner-city schools to the game. The cost of the ticket was $40. That's $12,000. He set up a donation fund. Well, kudos to all of you Syracuse grads and to Sean Keeley, who raised $44,444 through this foundation. $44,000 is 40 times what he wanted to do. And, sir, with the help of the Texas Bowl, sent over 4,000 kids to the Texas Bowl. Well done, sir. Well done.
You're saying that there were they sent 4,000 people, 4,000 kids from Syracuse?
4,000 inner-city youth from the Texas area in Syracuse Orange to watch the game. So instead of
I didn't even know they had 4,000 people at the game.
All right, moving on. Your turn. You got 3 minutes. Go.
I don't even have that long. I know it's been tough listening to actually trying to find the show the last couple of weeks with the website down. Hope it's back up. There are some problems. Hopefully they'll be rectified. I want to thank all our listeners, all our downloaders, all our people who listen on archive, people who call in, people, anyone involved or has had anything to do with the show. We've had Sean and I have had a blast hosting it the last 2 years. And, even dealing with Mr. Palmer on a week-to-week basis is usually a pleasure, sometimes aggravation, but usually a pleasure.
Appreciate that. Thanks.
A backhand compliment if I've ever heard one. It's a lot of fun doing the show. And, you know, hopefully you guys enjoy it as well. So, also, Michael Schumacher, probably the greatest F1 racer of all time, is in a medical coma right now after a car accident or after a skiing accident yesterday. So, thoughts to his family. But everyone have a great new year, and we will be back. I would say better than ever, but I think that means I think that's kind of stealing the Mike and Mike.
That seems we're better. That seems we're good.
Well, better than ever. Better than before.
Better than average.
I was going to say, better than ever just means that we were mediocre before, and now we're slightly above mediocre.
There you go.
All right. For Sean Palmer, Seth Kamens, the Seth and Sean Radio Show, Back Sports Page Radio, blogtalkradio.com. Have a good week.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year. Well, that came out really bad. Good night, everybody.